And good afternoon to you too as well. Happy Easter. In fact, it is Good Friday, April 18th in the year of our Lord, 2025. We have a great show coming up for you. Excited to have you with us today. In the final hour, we'll talk to Eric Stewart. He's the race director of the Crescent City Classic, which is happening tomorrow in the French Quarter and around the Esplanade area up into City Park. We'll get the details from him on, you know, the basic stuff like the road closures and what not to do, but also just kind of talk about what's happened with the Crescent City Connection over the last 5 years. It's a pretty interesting story. They really got clobbered by the pandemic. It was not totally clear what their future was going to be for a little while, but, you know, I'm made to understand from what I've heard about this. The Crescent City Classic is back bigger and stronger and with a focus on locals and local runners in a way that it hasn't had in kind of a while. You know, I think for a while they were trying to attract, you know, more professional runners from across the country and across the world. And I think now it seems like they've kind of turned their attention more back to, you know, New Orleans runners and Louisiana runners. And not just the serious ones who are actually trying to compete in a meaningful way, but also the people who wear costumes and are chugging beer the whole time that they're running. So that should be a good, clean, fun conversation coming up at 3:10. It is, of course, Easter weekend. There is lots to be grateful for. I have a list of the top 10 Easter candies right now, candies that Americans are going for this year. One classic Easter candy is falling out of favor. It's fallen down three spots from its ranking in the top Easter candies last year, and I'm not sorry. And it should fall farther, and it should fall out of the top 10, and no one should ever eat this candy again. That's my dictate. I mean, I'm kidding, obviously. If you like this candy, I'm not going to yuck your yum. We're all here to do what we're all here to do. But I hate this candy. Some of you can probably already guess what it is. Unfortunately, we are going to take some time today to talk about what happened at Florida State University yesterday. The shooter at FSU appears to be exactly the kind of black-pilled young man that we spoke about earlier this week with Ellie Reeve. We understand now that he had some pretty hardcore racist, white supremacist views. He was a member of a conservative club on campus, Turning Point USA. That's Charlie Kirk's outfit. So this is not going to be a conversation where I blame his actions on those factors, but we can't not talk about that. Have you seen people in your community get drawn into ideologies like this just because they felt lost or afraid or they were looking for companionship? Ellie Reeve told us on Tuesday what can help pull those people back from the brink, which is just talking to them and letting them know that they are not alone in this world and letting them know that we see their humanity. We understand that there is more to them than the loneliness or the anger or the bitterness that they may experience on a daily basis because of their lot in life. Ellie told us the worst thing you can do if you're trying to pull somebody back from the brink of some sort of extremist ideology is to insult their intelligence. By and large, these are not stupid people. They don't believe the things that they believe because they're stupid, because they're ignoramuses, because they're mental midgets. So we'll talk more after the jump here about that. What's the line between free speech and hate speech when it comes to political clubs or churches or classrooms? The shooter was kicked out of a political club on campus. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that, why, in the conversation that I'm having with my guest. My guest is going to be Brad Onishi, who we've spoken to on the program before. He's a very smart guy. He's a scholar, religious studies, a social commentator. He's co-host of a great podcast that's actually really quite popular. It's called the Straight White American Jesus Podcast. We'll be speaking to Brad Onishi in just a few minutes here. Also, a little bit of housekeeping before we kind of jump right into that conversation. We have more LSU baseball coming up tonight at 6. This first pitch, we're going to have pregame right here at 5:30. And then tomorrow, LSU and Alabama will be facing off in Game 3. Pregame is 4:30. First pitch is 5. You can hear both of those games right here on WWL AM and FM, but also WWL.com and the free Odyssey app where you can stream those games. We're still doing our Jazz Fest code word giveaway contest. We've had a couple winners this week. Your neighbors, Henry in Covington, Kristen in Marrero, Chris in Metairie, they're all going to Jazz Fest courtesy of WWL just for listening and getting the code word and taking that code word to WWL.com/contests. You punch it in there, you register, the whole thing takes about 30 seconds, and boom, maybe you get tickets to go see Jazz Fest on the second weekend. You can experience everything they have to offer there. Happy festing and good luck from Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. And WWL. My friend Coleman is in the jar today. Good afternoon to you too as well.
Hey, what's going on, guy?
You know, we've had such a great week. I'm sorry to kind of end it on such a serious note. We've been able to talk about so many other things, you know, including, you know, giant squid and Katy Perry being shot into space and things like that. But now we got to talk about this mass shooter.
Yeah, but that, you know, this is what we signed up for. We're here for the hard stuff. It's a part of the job. Yes, we have our fun days, but it's also our job to, you know, keep people informed, give our opinions, share a comment. And this is important because, like you said, we talked to Reeve early this week. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example to highlight, you know, get people to understand, even go back and listen to what she said and apply it to what you have to talk about today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And I've made this point a couple times this week talking about Kilmar Abrego Garcia, and I'll do it again later this afternoon. It is the American way to do things when they're hard, not just when they're easy, to do things that are difficult, things that humble us or maybe embarrassing to us, but we do them anyway. That's part of what made America great in the first place. So we will continue to do that on this program and on this station. We'll step away and come back with Brad Onishi, again, the co-host of the Straight White American Jesus podcast. If you want to join us at any time today, I would love to hear from you. We got the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line fired up and ready to go. That number is, of course, 504-260-1870. I hate making people wait. If you call up and you get put on hold, please stay there. I see you. I know you're there. I thank you for your patience. I really will try to rush to get you on the air. I will read 100% of the text messages you send me today. I'll reply to as many as I can, and the very best ones I plan to read on the air, so make them count. We'll get the difficult stuff out of the way early, and then we'll relax into the holiday weekend. I'm glad to be here with you today. I'm Ian Hoke in for Scoot. This is WWL. 120 on WWL, AMFM, and .com. And this hour, we're talking about something that is hard, but it is necessary for us to talk about it. Yesterday, a mass shooting at Florida State University left two people dead, several more injured. The alleged shooter wasn't just armed, he was apparently acting on his white supremacist views. And he has been associated with far-right student groups, Turning Point USA to be specific, it's Charlie Kirk's outfit. On Instagram, this man's account was taken offline after he was publicly identified, but we've seen screen caps of it, and right up top, he's included a quote from Jeremiah 51:20. "You are my war club. My weapon for battle. With you, I shatter nations. With you, I destroy kingdoms." Now, I want to be really clear about this, y'all. This is not a conversation about blaming religion or all conservatives or Republicans or all Trump supporters. This is just a conversation where we ask what happens when faith and politics get twisted up into something dangerous. I can think of no better person to talk about this with today than my guest, Brad Onishi. He's a scholar of religion and co-host of the podcast Straight White American Jesus. His work focuses on Christian nationalism, what it is, how it operates, and what happens when it intersects with violence and hate. Brad, welcome to the show. Thanks for being available on short notice today.
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
So some people might hear the phrase Christian nationalism and think that it just means loving God and country, which sounds great. Can you break down what Christian nationalism really is and why it's something that even devout Christians should be wary of?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right that there can be a conception of Christian nationalism as, hey, simply, I love God and I love my country. What's wrong with that? And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Not at all. But Christian nationalism is something different. Christian nationalism, it goes like this. Hey, because I love God, I get more of the country than anyone else. I get a place in the country that's different than you or you or you who don't love my God and don't love God in the same way that I do. That's Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism says that because the country is somehow a Christian country, whether by its history or by its culture, then as a Christian, I should get rights and I should get privileges that other people don't. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of folks who might believe those things in a way that we might call somewhat benign. Hey, you know, someone you know at church, an old lady who says, oh, I only vote for people who are Christian. Okay, that's one thing. And, you know, that's people's freedom and their right to do that. Unfortunately, on the very other extreme end of the spectrum are people who take the idea of the Christian country so extremely that it sometimes mixes and ends up in violence. They also mix their Christian identity with a racial identity. They say that, well, to be a real American is to be not only a Christian, but in some cases it's to be a white person. I hope everybody listening can see that we're a long way from, hey, I love God and my country. We're down a rabbit hole that's much more radical than that.
Yeah, really, really well said. The shooter was vocal, I think more vocal, and it's, again, it's been about 24 hours, so there's a lot yet to learn here, but he was very vocal about his white supremacist views, a little bit less so about what we might immediately identify as Christian nationalism. But how often do these two things overlap? White supremacy and Christian nationalism are two separate identities, but where they meet, there tends to be violence, right?
Well, unfortunately, we're seeing a rise in the coalescence of what we can call Christian nationalist identities and what we can call white nationalist identities. There's a long history to these two being entangled together. But in the current moment, what we're seeing is a growing sentiment that white Christians are heritage Americans, are the people who settled the country, and thus they are the real people of the United States. And one can see histories of this in KKK ideology. One can see histories of this going back to the 1980s in the Pacific Northwest to Aryan groups and white nationalist groups there. We could, of course, talk about Timothy McVeigh and his terrorist actions at the end of the 20th century. But when I think of someone like the FSU shooter, I think of somebody who is mixing the flag and the cross in order to form an identity that permits them to feel as if those around them, whether they be racial minorities or religious minorities, whether they be Muslim, whether they be Jewish, are other in a way that means they will never be a real American.
Why do you think it is that these connections that you've drawn, you know, specifically and going back a long time into American history between the KKK, more modern movements like this sort of coalescing of neo-Nazi ideologies in Eastern Washington and Idaho, these things don't get discussed, I don't think, in the mainstream media until there's a big bloody moment like this. I don't know that they get discussed much in sermons. Is this intentional? Is America turning away? Is white Christian America in particular turning away from this because it's too difficult to reconcile it with what we actually believe about Christ?
Well, it's complicated in the sense that there are many Christians who have faced this. There are many Christians who are standing up to things like white nationalism, things like Christian nationalism. Many who have confronted the racism and segregationist approaches to church in American history, including many white Christians. So there are those who are doing the work. Unfortunately, one of the things we saw, and this is a trend going back to the pandemic, is that during the pandemic, when you had a pastor who was willing to take a view that said, hey, we might need to listen to the state or the government or the federal government's regulations about masking and not gathering together. And then we had the George Floyd protests. What you saw there was a really flammable mix of resistance to both the government's kind of oversight when it came to the pandemic and discussions of racial justice as something that became really toxic in many churches. the result of that is a situation where many pastors simply do not want to go there in fear of losing their congregations, in fear of losing their jobs, and in fear of creating a split in their church that will never be overcome. And so, in essence, yes, this is a very difficult conversation to have in the American white church at the moment. And it is unfortunately a place where some of these ideas, these white nationalist ideas, can fester and cultivate without much challenge or rebuttal. Now, going back to what you said at the top, and something I want to say again to everyone listening, does that mean every church is a racist church? Does that mean every church that has a majority white congregation is white nationalist? Nope, 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 nope. And no, again, not at all, not in any way. But what it does mean is that unless there's an active approach to talking, especially to young men, about these kind of online radicalization movements that draw them into, you know, racist and nationalist and supremacist spaces, unless there's an active approach to preventing those, then there's a chance they can exist or coexist in a church and in a community without without much challenge, and I think that's a problem.
Yeah, I'm glad that you reinforced that point. Let's pause just again, and just I want to be so explicit about this because I know there's people for whom this is touchy, and they will want to assume the worst possible explanation for why you and I are having this conversation. We are not, you know, sticking our finger into the chest of conservative Christians and saying, you know, this is all your fault. We're pinning this assault on you. Every time this happens, it's because of you. This conversation and this sort of honesty and transparency about what is driving these events is to your benefit, is to Christian America's benefit. You do not want somebody coming in behind you over your shoulder and creating havoc and committing these acts of violence in your good name. If we can kind of get you to say, hey, man, turn around. There's somebody, you know, who's wrapping themselves in your flag, carrying your Bible, shooting black people at FSU. We should be able to have that conversation, and it should be, you know, challenging but rewarding, right?
I think so. And I think that it doesn't mean that that's easy, but it also means that it's necessary. When we think about domestic terrorism, you know, unfortunately, we can see that there are a number of domestic terrorist incidents and mass shootings that have been carried out by people who have had kind of mixed the flag and the cross in a way that became violent. We can think about South Carolina and the massacre at Mother Emanuel Church there. We can think about the ways that other mass shooters have included crusader imagery on their weapons or written manifestos that included Christian crusader motifs and themes. So facing up to that history is by no means easy. But I agree with you that rather than taking anything we're talking about as a kind of blanket accusation against anybody who's white or Christian, which is the furthest thing from, I think, what either of us would like to do, my hope would be somebody might ask, how is it possible in Holy Week, the week that you know, Christians celebrate the death and resurrection of Christ, for somebody who claims a Christian identity to do something like this? We should make it impossible for anyone who holds a Christian identity and is part of our churches and worships with us to have an ethos that would lead them down this pathway. That to me would be the reaction that I would what I would like in my congregation or in my community in the wake of these things. And I think it's important, and I know we'll get there, but that we sort of decode that Bible verse that you read at the top, because that does have some serious historical implications with white nationalism.
Let's circle back on that in a minute. But I'm glad that you mentioned these online spaces, because listeners of this program, this is very fresh for us. Just a couple days ago, we had a guest, Ellie Reeve, who is the author of this book, Black Pill, which is all about how lonely and angry and alienated young men are living in these online spaces, you know, in search of identity, brotherhood, companionship, And then they find themselves really quite suddenly, as if they've just, you know, stepped onto the slick part of a bowling alley lane. They're pulled into these radical ideologies. And by that point, it takes a lot to get them out without some sort of terrible consequence, like them going to jail or creating some act of violence. What do you think this is really about? Is it, 'cause we know it's not necessarily about personal faith. Is it about political power, or is it just about control?
One of the things that I like to emphasize in these situations is that a way to understand what this is about a story that you'd like to tell about yourself and your world. We live in a world that is increasingly atomized. We find ourselves cut off from communal pathways that were once available to people, whether in the United States or other places. Young people are trying to find an identity to build in an online world where social media and other things puts a lot of pressure on them. All of us want to tell a story about our lives, and we want to play a role, a character in a narrative that's bigger than us. When I think about the FSU shooter, when I think about other young men who've been radicalized online, who've gone down that pathway, I think of young men who unfortunately found in these communities, these radical, extreme, violent communities, a place to build their identity, to cultivate a story about who they are. And something that you often hear from those who are de-radicalized from these communities, who actually make it back from the abyss, is they say, you know, it kind of seemed like the belonging and the group participation was first, and a lot of the beliefs and the ideology came second.
Yeah.
And what they're saying there is becoming part of the group was the most important thing. Feeling like I had a team or a role or a tribe was what I really was looking for. And then the beliefs, the othering, the violence, the attacks on others, that was all part of being part of taking a part in the team. And so that's why I went down that road. But we don't often consider that sometimes participation and narrative come first and ideology and belief come second, whether that's in religion, whether that's in extremist activities, or whether it's in really tragic circumstances like this one.
This individual was a member of a political club on campus. Their founder said to the Tallahassee Democrat, which is a newspaper, not a Democrat, basically, our only rule in that club was no Nazis, colloquially speaking. And he espoused so much white supremacist rhetoric and far right rhetoric to the point where we had to exercise that rule. In other words, this individual is not kicked out of that club because he was conservative, but because he crossed a line into hate speech. What does that tell you about how normalized these views have become?
Well, I think what it tells us is that, you know, here are some students gathering at FSU who are part of a club that is devoted in some way to conservative politics, conservative ideas, to exploring what that means, whether politically or philosophically. And that is one of the best things about being on a college campus, in my opinion, having a chance to interact with others who want to discuss and debate really important ideas about the fundamental questions of human life and society. What I take from the comments made by the group's leader is that the FSU shooter was somebody who seemed to think that conservatism signified white nationalism, that conservatism signified some kind of white identity, a white Christian identity, that meant an active marginalizing or an active hatred towards those who didn't hold those identities. Mm-hmm. And I see in these comments actually the crux of something that I think is a really important part of our American political spectrum now and in the past and obviously into the future, which is there are conservatives in our country today. There have been conservatives going back however long this country's existed who have fought for conservative ideas, whether that be in taxation or government policies, whether that be in foreign policy, whether that be in states' rights. Those are debates that are well worth having. Unfortunately, what we're seeing, especially among young men, is that the idea that, oh, I'm conservative, and that includes a whole bevy of racist or anti-Semitic mm-hmm. or xenophobic feelings and beliefs, and that those go together with American conservatism. And I think one of the things that we have to consider is how to keep those two separate, as the leader of this group did by kicking him out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Probably better come to a close here, Brad. I know we don't have a ton of time with you, but just kind of in conclusion, what should thoughtful Christians, common sense conservatives, everyday Americans, how do we push back on this stuff in a way that defends dignity and does not feed into the idea that conservatives or people of faith are being unfairly attacked?
Well, I think for me, just from the Christian perspective, I've always thought two things. I've always thought that if I'm going to claim in one breath that God is bigger and more powerful than I could ever understand, then I need to also understand that God doesn't necessarily need me to defend God, because I think that somehow someone has been rude or irreverent or something when it comes to God's ways. If God is that big in one breath to have a plan for me and for the world, then I think my role may not be to be the one who is violently defending God, but I might take a lesson from Jesus, who himself was violently attacked and mm-hmm. acted as the sacrifice for others. Additionally, I think that I would say that as a Christian, the kingdom of God is the space that I inhabit. And the kingdom of God is much different and much bigger than the United States. And so I am a proud American, and I am somebody who loves my country. But to think that the kingdom and the country are the same is to do a great disservice to the kingdom. And in fact, lowers the status of the eternal destination and the plan of God into something that is much different. And so I guess for me, from the Christian perspective, to fight Christian nationalism is not to be embarrassed about being a Christian. It's to say, as a Christian, I'd rather the government not promote or find its way into my religion, because I don't know which kind of Christianity they're going to promote, and I don't know which one they're going to enforce, and I don't know which one that they're going to decide is the right one. And so I'd rather live in a country where the government stay out of it, and I can pursue my life in the kingdom without the state telling me what that looks like. And to me, that's the essence of saying to Christian nationalism, this is not only hurtful to those who aren't Christians, but it's hurtful to Christianity itself.
Incredible. Really well said. Really profound. That's going to stick with me and a lot of people listening. Just in our final few moments here, Brad, tell us about where we can read your books and where we can hear your podcast.
Sure. I'm the author of a book called Preparing for War, The Extremist History of White Christian Nationalism and What Comes Next. You can find that anywhere you get books, including an audio version. And I co-host a podcast called Straight White American Jesus, which we've done for 6 years. We have about 800 episodes. And it's basically two religion professors who have served in ministry, explaining all the ins and outs of Christian nationalism and everything we've talked about today. So check it out if you're a podcast listener.
We will certainly be doing that. Just Brad, the audience is responding really positively to the conversation we've had, which I'm glad, because it's kind of high risk to be able to just have a great conversation about this. But thank you so much for your time, your work, and your way. Be blessed. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter.
You too.
My guest is Brad Onishi. When we come back, we will be taking more of your phone calls. I do not have another scheduled interview until 3:10, which is plenty of time to talk to you. If you're on hold, please stay there. I'll get immediately to Bob and Glenn and the rest of you. I got a lot of text messages to get to as well. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot on WWL. I'll be right back after this. Stick around. It's time to hear from you. What does your faith teach you about how to treat others, even when you disagree? And what does God and country mean to you? How has that changed over the last few years? I firmly believe faith and patriotism are the most powerful forces for good that we have in this country. And if there are people among us who want to turn that upside down, inside out, and push themselves into extremism and use our patriotism and our faith to harm and murder and terrify others, that is everyone's business. Are your religious leaders, elected leaders, are they doing enough to speak out against hate and political violence like this? When's it going to be enough? When is the fever going to break? Let's get back to the phone lines. Thanks, everybody, for hanging on. We'll start out in Tarrytown with Bob. Bob, you're on the air. Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, I want to know if you have any information on the number of illegal aliens that commit these types of crimes versus the radical white or white supremacists. Because it appears the problem won't be the illegal aliens, it's more of the far right or white supremacy that caused these problems.
I think there's kind of a fast answer here, Bob. I mean, I'm not going to be able to give you specific numbers in this moment as a response to your question, but I don't think that we see many illegal immigrants carrying out racially motivated mass shooting events. That exclusively basically belongs to, religious extremists, whether they're Christians or whether they're Muslim. So I don't know what the value is in asking, well, how many, you know, illegal immigrants commit crimes like this? We know illegal immigrants commit crimes. You're not going to find me, you know, claiming that they don't. But this is a very specific kind of crime that we as a country and as a Christian leaning nation appear not really to have a fast answer for. And so that's why we're having a conversation that's about this specific strain of violence, not Muslim terrorism, not illegal immigrants, you know, kidnapping women in the woods. Does that make sense? All right. Well, thank you, Bob, for being a part of the show today. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Glenn in Gentilly. Glenn, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You know, racism didn't start with Christianity, but Christianity has been the greatest promoter of racism, beginning with having an image of God as the image looking like that young guy who done the shooting. And the brainwashing. And why would you make a image of God as a white man except for racial dominance in the world? So it's been a scheme. And that young boy is just a victim of that brainwashing, that they are inherently, by their own inheritance of having white skin, they are superior to anybody else. Mm-hmm. And what does the Ku Klux Klan do? They burn people on the symbol of Christianity, a cross. Mm-hmm. You know, so... Yeah. You know, and the teachings was that the African was the son of was one of Noah's son. They call Ham and was one to be used in slavery. That's what Christianity taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to push back just a little bit, Glenn, but also like in kind of invite you to say more about what you think about it. When you began the call saying, you know, nobody's done more to kind of spread and engender racism in the world than Christian and Christians. I don't know that that's exactly the way I would phrase it. I mean, we have mountains and mountains of evidence that show how the political systems that subjugated and oppressed black people in this country often used the church and the Bible to justify doing that. But I don't know that I would outright agree that Christianity is inherently a belief system that engenders racism. I do take your point about, you know, what we think Jesus looks like, but that belongs to a pretty specific set of Christians, and I don't think is representative of the religion as a whole. Would you agree?
I would say that none of them fight against it. And the image is everywhere. It's out on murals. They got big statues in Brazil. Got a big old statue in Brazil. Yeah. They got you go to the Sistine Chapel. God is a white man. So it's, you open up a Bible, you see the white Jesus in the Bible. You look at the movies. You know, the greatest story ever told. Mm-hmm. Everybody in there that's of the prophets, all white people. So yes, when the Indian didn't go for it, they had to exterminate him because he wouldn't believe in Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel safe when people believe in Christianity and accept that God looks like the ones who wants to enslave them.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, I'm sorry to stop you here, but I'm running out of time. But boy, we really appreciate your perspective. Thank you very much for listening to the show. We'll get back to more of your calls after we take care of some business here. We'll get the news at 2:00. I do want to speak to you. I'd rather be doing that than anything else. So we'll push back the news bomb just a little bit. Again, I don't have another scheduled interview until 3:10. So it's just you and me in the wallpaper, folks. Let's keep at it. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Thanks for listening today. We'll be right back after this. On the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, I've got people on hold. Don't get anything. Just stay there. Just stay on hold. I'll get to you after the news. Monica in Algiers is listening and says, thank y'all for talking about this. Some young men really need help. This is a great topic because we cannot keep having these shootings. How many people have to die before something major is done? Thank you, Monica. Here's another text that says, have you noticed right-wing politicians pull for the Ten Commandments in schools and government buildings, but not the Beatitudes? I love that. I love that. If you're a teacher and you got the Ten Commandments up in your classroom, why don't you put the Beatitudes right next to it and see how that goes over? I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. We'll get caught up on the news, and then we'll be back with more of your comments right here on WWL, AM, FM.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Don't change that station.